This is the Jerry Doyle Show.
So here's the question. Is Paul McCartney really dead? But Jerry, I see him on TV. He's giving concerts. He's everywhere. But what if he's not the original Paul McCartney? Now, if this story came from someone other than our guest Joel Gilbert, you recognize the name, writer-director of Atomic Jihad, writer-director Farewell Israel, a guy who's been all throughout the Middle East, speaking Arabic, Hebrew. He lectures. He's traveled all over the world. He probably is one of the foremost knowledgeable people on the planet with regard to radical Islam, the Islamist movement. And he also has a tribute band, which is a nice tribute today, the 69th birthday for Bob Dylan. They have a tribute band for Bob Dylan. But his latest is Paul McCartney Really Is Dead, The Last Testament of George Harrison. Mr. Gilbert, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me today, Jerry.
You know, Jesse was telling me about this morning, and I go, well, I've never really liked the Beatles, but I am intrigued by the story. And if I understand how the story played out, it was the summer of 2005, and a package arrived at your offices, and there was no return address, and there were mini cassette audio tapes dated in 1999, The Last Testament of George Harrison. And the story is that Paul McCartney was actually killed in a crash in 1966 and replaced with a double?
That's right. People remember this story from the late 60s. The Beatles stopped touring in 1966, very famously. They said they wouldn't tour anymore, and that raised some suspicions. 3 years later, it went worldwide in the media, radio, television, all over the world. They came out with a theory that Paul McCartney had died in a car accident in 66. This was covered on ABC News, all the network news, and the theory was put forward because on all the Beatles album covers after 66, there seemed to be clues and hints that Paul McCartney had died. For instance, on the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album cover is essentially a grave scene. There's a freshly dug grave, and you see Paul McCartney's bass lying, designed in yellow flowers, that it says Paul, and the bass drumhead is a gravestone. There are many clues in all the album covers, including, if you listen to the music, you can read the lyrics. He died in a car crash at 5 a.m. I miss him so much. On and on with all the lyrics. And then people even discovered lyrics in songs played backwards, where in certain songs you hear the Beatles clearly say, I buried Paul, or Paul is dead, miss him, miss him, miss him. So when this went worldwide in 69, the Beatles quickly came out and denied that Paul McCartney was dead, even though there were clearly hundreds of clues that couldn't have been a coincidence. And Paul was on the cover of Life magazine saying, Paul is still with us. And they were afraid Beatles fans might harm themselves. So sure enough, in my offices a couple of years ago, we received a couple of cassette tapes where there's someone purporting or says he's George Harrison and tells the entire story of why this cover-up was done, that Paul McCartney was killed in a car accident, and it sounded identical to George Harrison's voice, apparently late 1999, at the time, same time frame that he was injured in a attack in his home. So until now, the Paul is Dead mystery was considered a hoax. But in this film, you actually hear the narration of George Harrison. We don't know 100% sure if it's him, but we think it is, and he tells the entire story from beginning to end. So if anyone wants to see the trailer or read about the history of it, it's at paulreallyisdead.com. And it's a very fascinating part of pop culture history, and this is an entirely new take on what could have been a great conspiracy.
And British intelligence agency, MI5, they decided to participate in this cover-up because they were afraid of mass suicides because of the absolutely, over-the-top Beatles fans?
Right. In this narration, George Harrison says that it's actually MI5 and representing Her Majesty's government that insisted on a cover-up because they felt that because of Beatlemania and the mass hysteria, if anybody remembers the films of those days, women were just screaming and crying and throwing themselves and in love with Paul. So they were afraid that Paul's death would be an even greater tragedy if thousands of, or even the hundreds, or even ten Beatles fans killed themselves. So by replacing Paul McCartney with an imposter, they were able to, according to the theory, they were able to not only save hundreds of Beatles fans, but to continue the Beatles for several years to come. So this is the theory put forward. So in this film, we put a lot of the historic footage. We show all the clues that people know about, and there's about 100 additional clues that no one knew about that are described in the film, and we put music to it. So it's a 95-minute film, and it's a lot of fun, and it's interesting, and it you know, it's really a must-watch documentary. Anybody who lived through Beatlemania or newer Beatles fans who want to reach back and remember that time and learn about the Paul is Dead mystery, just check out the trailer. It's paulreallyisdead.com.
Joel Gilbert with us. When you look back, and you're a music guy, and your tribute band is phenomenal. I mean, I think people would be hard-pressed listening if we put Bob Dylan next to your group, you singing and him singing. The stuff matches up very well. But being a music guy, what was it about the Beatles that when they came onto the scene that exploded the way it did? I mean, I'll contrast that today with, you know, we've got these ready-made pop stars, the Justin Biebers, or we got the Taylor Swifts, and, you know, you got Twitter, and you got Facebook, and you got MySpace, and you got really aggressive marketing campaigns out there that can make someone an overnight sensation. But the technology, or the information technology, the social networking, wasn't what it was then as it is today. What was it about the Beatles that just instantly, when they came here, it was just pandemonium?
I think it was a combination of four or five things. One of them was the timing, the era. President Kennedy had just been assassinated. It was certainly the times people were looking for, and youth were looking for something to latch onto that was fun and innocent and different from what they were used to. Secondly, it was also the music itself and the song lyrics about love. It was very naive music. It was more back to the 50s type of feelings and relationships. Love me do, I want to hold your hand. It was all things that in lyrics and music that appealed to a more naive or innocent time when times were getting very complicated. And then I think women especially just fell in love with the four Beatles and their haircuts. It was certainly a combination of things that doesn't come around quite a lot, and the Beatles themselves were very, very talented.
You know, I've never been able to really warm up to the Beatles music. I don't know whether it's because my mom wouldn't let me go see the movie Help when all my buddies were going to see the movie Help, so maybe I have like this parental rejection of the Beatles because everyone went to the movie theater and I didn't. But I never could warm up to their music, with the exception of a few songs, Yesterday, a couple others that I could think of. But I mean, their music is you really love it, or you really you hate it?
Well, it was catchy and it was perfect for radio play. 2 minutes, you got a couple of times a chorus and out. And people came to see them live, but the live shows were not as good as the recordings, because when they played live, the women were screaming so loud that no one could really hear the music, and that's one of the reasons they claimed that they stopped touring. And there's a famous story where after a show in Detroit, Paul McCartney and Lennon grabbed Ringo Starr, and they said, what were you doing on Love Me Do? That was a real strange thing you were playing on drums on that song this time. And he said, we didn't play Love Me Do tonight. And they go, yes, we did. He couldn't hear them on stage. They couldn't hear each other either. So it was very very difficult to play, even for themselves, to perform. There was no way to hear each other or hear the music. So the Beatles' strength really was in recording. Even if you look at the Ed Sullivan show tapes on YouTube or wherever you can find it, their voices aren't that great. They're kind of weak. Their musicianship is not that great. The strength and magic was in the studio with their producer, George Martin, that they made all those great songs and great hits. And later in the 60s, I even have a special feature that we added to the film. It's called Bob Dylan Meets the Beatles. And it's a true story that the reporter that introduced Dylan to the Beatles took them to their hotel in New York City, and Dylan taught them how to smoke marijuana. At that time, all British youth were pill heads, meaning they popped pills. So Dylan offered the Beatles marijuana, according to the story, and the Beatles offered him pills. And according to the hippie culture at that time, pills were chemicals. They weren't natural. marijuana was natural. It's from the earth. So Dylan won the argument, and he got the Beatles, taught them how to smoke pot. And from that moment, they never stopped. And it came out in all the music, the psychedelia, all the songs that you hear from the late 60s albums. So that's a very interesting part of how Dylan influenced the Beatles and how their music changed.
When you look at the tortured artist kind of persona, when you look at the chemically induced environment that some of this comes from, whether it be music or art or poetry or whatever, you know, when you listen to Clapton talking about when he was playing, when he was all whacked out, and, you know, some people say, he's not really quite as edgy as he was, but he's better, you know, as far as his playing skills go. Is music better? And again, we're not advocating drug use or anything like that on the program, but, I mean, do these artists, and you look at Hollywood with all the problems they have there, you know, these tortured souls that, you know, feel compelled to just get completely whacked out, or they've got, you know, huge dependency problems. Is that really an excuse that they make because they just want to do drugs, or is there something to it that the drugs does something that allows them to go into a place that they might not be able to tap into?
Well, I think the last thing you said, I think musicians and artists do become mentally and physically addicted to certain drugs to achieve a certain state of creativity. Ultimately, in the first place, it's not necessary because they probably didn't use these kind of things when they were starting out. And ultimately, it's something that has destroyed more music and more musicians and more artists. We can go on and on, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, and on, how many great albums and great works of art and musicianship would exist if it were not for the drugs that cut off their lives at such a young age. The pressure of touring, having to come up with an album, coming up with songs, the not wanting to disappoint their audience, their fans, this is tremendous pressure that leads artistic people to seek help or answers. And if it's being offered in the form of drugs, and it's a culture that people say, well, this can help you, too many artists have gone to drugs thinking that they'll help facilitate their creativity, and it quickly becomes a destructive addiction. And I don't think ultimately it causes much more harm than help. But in the film Paul McCartney Really Is Dead, there are several references to Paul McCartney trying LSD. He even talks about it on television. And their entire participation in marijuana, it's covered by the narration of George Harrison and his voice and Liverpool accent. I hope everyone will check it out and see what you think.
I was looking at this article in the New York Times. The headline is Marijuana Fuels a New Kitchen Culture. And they're talking about how stoner food now is the new comfort food because a lot of the chefs seem to just be baked while they're baking, so to speak, and that the revival of cheeseburgers and gourmet pizzas and Philly cheese sandwiches that are being served in high-end restaurants as opposed to the haute cuisine where you got one pea, a baby carrot, and a piece of fish that was the size of a quarter, that this stoner mentality is affecting what we see being served in restaurants.
I think that could be true. I think there's no question that the even the musicians that survived the 60s, I remember I met David Crosby once, and he said to me, we were right about civil rights, but we were wrong about drugs. And ultimately, a culture that develops itself, even cuisine, to accommodate drug use is in big trouble.
Yeah, you know, and that's it. And now we've got the medicinal marijuana movement, and we've got more states that are, you know, voting in the use of marijuana, and there are obviously going to be people that, you know, go to these factories and just get approved because they just want to smoke weed. But, you know, I look at this movement towards, you know, the expansion of medical marijuana. I look at the Congress talking about regulating and taxing internet gambling so that they can raise $72 billion to help balance the budget. I'm not so sure that the direction that we're going in is necessarily the right one.
Well, you don't have to look very far in terms of research or just public knowledge to know that we know what happened in the 60s and what happened to all the musicians and the culture, and that there's nothing really good that can come out of it other than a temporary fleeting joy. As Maharishi Mahesh Yogi says in this film, Paul McCartney really is dead. There's a section where he talks about the differences between establishing a real happiness and joy in one's life versus the idea of a worldly fleeting joy. And in this film, Paul McCartney, George Harrison, who's doing the narration, says the real reason they went to India was because they wanted, everyone remembers they went to India in the 67. They wanted Maharishi Mahesh Yogi to help them to put Paul McCartney's soul into the imposter so they would have Paul McCartney back. So it's a very fascinating, very fascinating twist on just about everything. And he even cites that John Lennon may have been assassinated simply because he was threatening to reveal that the man we know today as Paul McCartney is really an imposter. So check it out. It's PaulMcCartneyReallyIsDead.com.
Paul really is dead. Is it Paul McCartney really is dead? Or is it Paul really is dead?
Paul really is dead.com.
Interesting. Joel Gilbert, thanks again for your time on the program. Check it out. I find this stuff fascinating. Then you go into the whole conspiracy theory thing about how could so many people keep this covered up for so long? You know, somebody on their deathbed would say, well, I've got something I need to tell you. And that's why, you know, when you look at conspiracy theories, you know, there's always something in there that doesn't quite make sense. But Joel Gilbert, as I pointed out to you when he first came on, is a guy that's done a lot of involved in-depth research with regard to radical Islam, the Islamist movement, the influences of Iran, secular democracies, and how they're rejected by the mullahs. So if it was coming from just somebody that, you know, is in the bunker, I'd have some serious concerns about this. But Mr. Gilbert's very fastidious in what he does. And it is called Paul McCartney Really Is Dead, The Last Testament of George Harrison. PaulReallyIsDead.com is the website. Joel Gilbert, thanks again for your time on the program.
Okay, thanks for having me.
The Jerry Doyle.